claymores and fire inspectors and so forth. And we came back, and this realization that in the world of shit there, when they took me in a command bunker there, and started showing me where all the explosions or the demolitions switches are. And you tell me this one destroys the right one, this destroys the left one, this destroys the command bunker, and this one destroys every damn thing. I figured back then that we was a pretty damn rough spot. Maybe my first impression was kind of wrong here. Anyway, that night there, I had the honor of being the guard for the night there. So I didn't know what we was supposed to do, other than you told me sometime during the night, go and get the one of the LLDB people, and they would go around the perimeter with me. So I don't know what time it was, quite late at night, I went out and grabbed a shotgun off one of the sergeant's walls and started around the perimeter. And I made it, no problem. Got the LLDB and went around there. Lieutenant Hahn, I think, was the lieutenant that went with me, the XO of the LLDB team. And I went around, no problem there. Everybody seemed to be awake and everything. I came back and went to put the shotgun in and checked the safety and everything and put it up on the nails, and the damn thing fired right over to the dispensary. Normally there was a guy sleeping in that portion dispensary, and the first thing I went over there and looked to see if anybody was over there, so who I'd killed, you know, and I went over there, and luckily nobody was in there. But I don't know how many damn $1,000 worth of medicine that gets blew to hell over there. Anyway, pretty soon you come over and out there with a smile on your face, and Jesus Christ, what am I going to do now here? You check the weapon. Found out that it had a faulty safety on it there, so I breathed a little easier after that. But that was my first impression of Dangerous Dan here. Well, I have a lot of fond memories of Anne Fool. Especially the enlisted people on there, because I figured that we had the best of the whole army here, the cream of the crop there. Some of their names I remember, like Worley, I think he was a Spec 4. I believe he was a radio operator, I'm not sure. And then Sergeant Elam, John Elam, he was a weapons man, outstanding individual. And Sergeant Cirrhosis, medic here, they called him Boxy here. One thing I'm learning about him, other than being an outstanding NCO, I think he was a buck sergeant at the time, but he was always talking about goddamn clitorises there. Every time you'd see him, he'd be talking about one. I don't know if he ever did get one or not, but he should. Some of the outstanding Vietnamese that was there is, of course, Major Foy, which I later saw him in Can Tho in 68 there. I came through and he was the IG there. And we had a quite long chat with him there, and I always had high regard for him. And I will agree with you, Dan, that he was probably one of the most courageous Vietnamese and probably the most loyal Vietnamese over there. There's quite evidence of that, the way that we could do every month on the payroll there, where you could more or less give him the payroll there, and he'd pay the troops, and what was left he brought back, and you could figure that it'd be right to the damn penny, and I would be awfully surprised if he ever did skim any off it, which you normally expect some of the Vietnamese to do here, but I had all the confidence in the world with him. And I'm sorry to hear that he may be a prisoner of war up in North Vietnam there. And the whole situation kind of saddened me, the way that the Americans tried so long to get these people to be loyal to them and back to them, and the ones that were, they turned their back on them and just left them there for, and you don't know how many really been slaughtered and just, or worse, happened to them here. And I just can't hardly have too much respect for the goddamn politicians and the strategicians here that planned that and conducted the withdrawal or the whole damn war like that. It was, and I'll agree with you there, it was pretty screwed up situation there, the way they, Johnson and some of the other politicians that never cocked a cannon, but they call all the shots here. So much for that, because I'm getting a little bit over my head there. I'm still a grunt at heart here. Another outstanding Vietnamese that I met over there, and he was up at the Phu Hiệp FOB most of the time there. He spent, I think, 3 weeks out of a month up there, and then we'd bring him in and give him a week off there, and he was extremely loyal. An honest individual there. Air was his name, just E. And he was a Wahao. And when I left An Phu there, he went to Tan Chau with me, and he spent a few months with me at Tan Chau there. And went operations with me, and, just like a shadow to me there. When I left Tan Chau, I lost track of him there. And but I was talking to somebody in Treetown the last time I was over there, and said that he went to Arvin and was a NCO and interpreter there. I have no way of knowing this one way or another, other than I was told that. At the Phu Hiệp FOB that I talked about, you could constantly see it was just about less than 1,000 meters from the Cambodian border here. And there was a pagoda there that always the VC usually used as a forward operational base out of there to attack us here. And we would go up there, I believe it was a week or two at a time here. Two Americans would go up there and spend a week up there. The facilities up there wasn't too bad there. They had cement bunker type thing, which you could get away from the elements. And we had outstanding CIDG people, and they had their families up there, and they got along real well up there. And we had a little action up there every now and then. We had a 81 up there, and I'd scrounge every time I got a chance to go up there, 81 ammunition with the VT fuses, a very old time there, and I just loved those things, and we'd fire H&I fires throughout the night with them there. But the VT fuses, we have one incident I can remember. I'm not sure if it was John Elam or Whirly Cirrhosis, I'm not sure, but anyway, one night I went to fire H&I's there, and I set the fuses, and dropped one down, and the damn thing no more cleared the muzzle. And it fired off, and whoever it was come out there like a goddamn mad bull. What the hell are you trying to do, kill me? And I couldn't let on, and I was as scared as they was, though, but I didn't. I made an excuse, you know, that all the ammunition, and let it go at that. So I don't know if it helped the situation any, but that's the excuse I used. Well, it seemed like I spent a hell of a lot of time up at the FOBs. It seemed like finding myself coming back and forth. And I never realized why it was until just recently there. In Dan's letter about Colonel Ray there, or Colonel Ray, yeah, Maggie. But it seemed like every time anybody come around, I'd always be on the damn operation or up at the FOB. And just dawned on me there that Maggie liked second lieutenants there, and I think probably Dan was jealous here. That's why he kept me out on the FOB when he knew anybody was coming like that. That's what I always thought anyway, Dan, but maybe you're not guilty of it there, but it makes a good story. Another reason I remember in the camp there, which kind of hilarious now, it wasn't at the time, but we got an airdrop of supplies there. All the roads were all muddy and you couldn't get a vehicle up through them there during the wet season. We got an air supply drop there, and they come in there, and we was out there waiting for it, and they kicked the bundles out there, and it went right through the darn barracks there, the Vietnamese barracks there. I guess it was gasoline, ammunition, and so forth, but it's funny now thinking about it there, but at the time it wasn't. It was Mr. Duke there, he was the ag agent. And he was an outstanding, hard-working individual there, trying to get the farmers to use fertilizers and plant different crops there besides the old sorry strain of rice there. And we finally got some IR-8 rice in there that I believe it come from Philippines. I'm not sure on that. It was pretty much standard throughout Vietnam. But we finally got him to raise some of it there. And another thing, probably the first in the area, is from the Philippines, we got some corn seed. And he got a farmer to plant corn up there. It's probably a hectare of corn, about 3/4 acre. And it come out fairly well there. Nothing like in the States here. We sure didn't get 150 bushel per acre up there or anything like that. But for the first start, I think it was outstanding here. At least we got something out of it there. Another incident there, I remember with Mr. Duke there, I rode home to a local high school in Jonesville, the ag teacher, and got a soil testing kit. Brought it over there, they sent it over there, and got the interpreters to translate it into Vietnamese. I took it over and gave it to him, and he used it, and from after talking with him a few months later, I guess he had pretty good results of it. But he was an outstanding individual there, along most of the people in the Anpu district was. Another incident that I went on was another incident that I later went on there, the results of it there, was they was firing, H&I fired with the Ford Deuce mortar one night, and they had a short round, and it hit a house, a village from there, at the main camp. And we got word that it killed a boy up there. So Cirrhosis and I went up there on a MedCap and Civic Action. And sure enough, the darn round had hit just a corner of the house there and it blew this kid's head off. And the mother wasn't too concerned about the kid. I mean, their belief is that if a body is detached from the head, that the soul or the head will be wandering eternity trying to get back to the body here, so they don't have too much, if you don't have the whole body, they don't have much respect for any of it there, so, but it was awful hard to go up there and try to sympathize with, or empathize with a mother there that just lost her kid, knowing that you had kids back in the States about the same age there, and try to put yourself in their feelings, or their place, see what their feelings would be here. And it's kind of hard to separate your personal feelings from your professional feelings and when you can relate so closely as that. Which on several incidents we did there. Another incident close to that was a little girl up at Phu Hep there that always, well, you always pick out a child particularly there that is kind of partial to you, you know, and this little girl, well, she was the one that every time she would come up there, she'd be the first one out to the boat to greet me and the last one to wave goodbye. And she's probably 4, 5, 6 years old, hard to tell the age of some of those little kids up there, but anyway, one day back to the main camp there after they'd been murdered up there, they brought this little girl in dead there, and there wasn't a mark on her there, she'd been killed by a concussion here. Which to me, that was worse to see that little girl like that with not a mark on her than it would have been if I'd seen her tore up pretty badly here. I took that kind of personal, but nobody ever knew that. Other is to this, out there, which is kind of humorous. We're on operations up for the Cambodian border, maybe across, I'm not sure, but anyway, just going across there, and the wow, I assume it's most of Vietnamese customs. If they like you, they show your affection by putting their arms around you or holding hands with you. Anyway, we're walking across the rice paddies on operation coming in, and Vietnamese carrying a machine gun across his shoulders, which he was not much bigger than a machine gun. He came up and grabbed me by the hand, and we were walking across the rice paddies hand in hand. Boy, what if the people would see me now walking across the dam fighting a war here, holding hands with one another here. But there's several instances like that, and that's just a real way of showing friendship there. And in most cases, they never meant nothing by it there. Up at back to Phu Hep again at the Cambodian border there. Several operations that we run from the FOB to and across the border here and around the we were constantly firing at the pagoda over there, and we had intelligence reports that we got quite a few casualties from up in there. Most of the incidents that we went over across the border there, it was never reported even back to the main base there, so anything official, we were on operation there, but never never given the directions or anything like that. I believe the border violations that time was called a code word Nantucket there, and I don't know how damn many we had on us there, but we were always in and out of the border. And firing across the border. As far as that assassination operation that you had, Dan, I was never officially told about anything like that. I know you'd mentioned once, and I can't give you any time frame when it was that that you said you had a classified mission there, and that's just about the end of it. I knew when you said that, I didn't want to get too damn involved in it there. Like all things, if I were told to do something, I'd have done it here. Maybe give you a little hassle at first, but I'd always end up doing it. But I always figured that something like that was trying to come down here due to the fact the intelligence and the change in training and some of the other things here. But it's one of those things I didn't want to get involved in it there or question people too damn much here because I didn't think it really involved me at the time. I'm not sure when you got the mission there, but these people can doubt you not, but my experience with you, damn it, if you said you had a mission there, you did there. I don't doubt it in one minute here, which I don't know if any consolation to you. But I'm sure if you decided to have carried it out there, that it would have gone there and it would have been a success there. After looking over and going to go over and thing, we sure as hell did a lot with very few people here. And I never realized that we never did have a full team over there all the time I was there. And I can see now why we're always turning around, meet ourselves coming and going over there. Either you're going out to the FOB or you're just coming back. And then it was twice as bad when we manned two of them. Had two Americans out here, so that took four people away, so you had maybe two or three back at the main camp there, which was sitting everything pretty damn thin. You probably have the records of the miles of roads, or kilometers of roads, that we build up there in the district, and also the number of schools and the aid stations that was built there, which I think it was pretty darn good, a number that was accomplished. You know, basing that on other areas that I was in, I don't know if you could say they were similar to that. Tan Chau was probably as similar as you could get. But we never accomplished as much civic action as we did in Anfu District. And most of the times we had more people at the other teams than we did at Anfu in 424. Another incident over there, which is kind of humorous now to think about it there, is we had one sergeant, I don't know who it was, or his name there, but anyway, he was reported back to his wife that he was killed in action there. And she almost passed out when she started kept getting letters from him, and finally, through the Red Cross, I guess it confirmed that he was still breathing. Another incident with a guy's wife there was, I believe it was a Spec 4 that was having trouble with his wife in Fayetteville, and she wouldn't write to him, and his morale was pretty damn low there, so I told him, I said, well, you go on, write a letter, and I'll send it to my wife and have my wife personally take it to her. Anyway, she did, and I guess my wife got in all kind of trouble there, mind her own business, everything like that, when she gave that to the guy's wife here, so I don't know what ever happened to him. He wasn't in the team very long after that. He transferred somewhere else, and I even forgot what his name was now. Remember another incident, we had a team sergeant, and like I say, he wasn't there very long there, that he drinking quite a little bit, he was drinking about any damn thing he could get his hands on there, medic, alcohol, and what have you, and one night we needed him real bad, we couldn't get him, and I believe we had a discussion about relieving him or not, and we come up with the idea, which I thought was outstanding, that we just send him on back to the B team there, because he was one of the old NCOs. He was just like a damn cavalry horse. He'd been ridden to the as far as he could ride there. He'd been in Vietnam, I guess, 5 years straight there, and he was just worn out there. And he was just at the end of his rope there, and he needed some time off. He needed to get back to the States there, and I'm not sure if he went back to the States or not. You may know more about that than I do, but just with one incident I remember. And he was sent back with, of course, no derogatory remarks or anything like that. He just sent him back for rest here. I'm aware that 9th Division Regiment is going to come in and take their camp there, which I doubted at the time that they could there. Because of those six companies we have, I don't think that would be any match for the regular Vietnamese regiment there that didn't have any incentive to do anything, where our people did, and they were well organized and trained and everything. So I had my doubts at the time if that regiment or division would have had a heck of a time taking that. I'm just glad that we never had to find out. And General Kwan, remember when he came down and sent word down, I guess he would come down there and give him amnesty. And it took the situation, it was getting pretty damn hairy there all over. You could feel it within the troops here. It kind of eased things down a little for us here. Incident I remember about you, the two things here that, remember the first operation I went on, you had your hat. They always called it the Dangerous Dan hat there, the one you had made over there. And anyway, every operation I got the Dangerous Dan hat and put on and wore it there. So damn if it didn't work, because I never did get a hole in it. So I figured that was a pretty lucky hat there. I assume that you brought it back with you. But the only time that I could get over on you there is you being a captain, quartermaster, and I was lieutenant infantry, that the Geneva Convention always said that the senior combat officer would be in charge of the prisoners. So I always made it a point there that to let you know that if we ever got captured, that I would be in charge there. And I think that's about the only way I could ever get over on you here, which I don't know, I don't think you lost too much sleep over it. I know I didn't. Getting back to the politics and stuff of the my definition of the CIA and the politicians versus the special forces missions and people are just like a damn country there. They use them, and when they get through using them, they throw the damn things away there. That's just about like they did on your operation. When they seen they couldn't use you or you balked, then they discarded you, and you'll play one heck of a time trying to prove it there. And another example of that is just the way they're doing now with Ollie North there, which is just about similar to yours there. Remember, one time I believe we just got back from stand up at the Fuhep FOB, and normally we'd come in and get cleaned up, and if we had time, we'd get on and chow duck for couple hours, a little eye and eye. But anyway, I came in that time, and I'm pretty sure that's what it was. And throughout the last month, we've been getting quite a few intelligence reports about build up over in Cambodia, that they were building caskets and what have you. So we knew something was coming down pretty damn quick there. We didn't know exactly when. But anyway, I came back from the FOB and getting ready to get down few hours or so down and chow duck. And one of them got in, and you came out and says, get your stuff, and you and Willie's going on ambush tonight. And God, I just got back. And you know, that's all right, go on out there, and you don't know when you come back. Anyway, I couldn't convince you that my sperm count was pretty high, but I got my stuff, and we went out there, and it trucked us up so far. And then we walked probably 3 or 4 miles across the race paddy getting to the ambush site, protecting the bridge here. You said that we'd had intelligence that they were going to attack Convent, and that they were going to blow that bridge to prevent the relief column from getting up there. So anyway, we set up a position, and I don't know what time of night it was. It was pretty damn late there, and then all hell broke loose. That was my first firefight, and I was so goddamn scared there I couldn't even talk on the radio for a while. All of a sudden I started smelling shit, and oh my God, I shit my pants, you know. And anyway, what had happened is some asshole, probably a VC or Vietnamese, something anyway, taking a shit there, and I'd set that radio right in it, and I had shit all over me. And if that wasn't one heck of a mess there for the rest of the night, smelling that, not knowing whose it was. Anyway, the ambush here went off successful. We killed, I think, one and captured one weapon. And the weapon for a while was up at the main headquarters in the train. It was a BAR type looking weapon. And one way to identify it is it had where the round had hit right above the receiver, sideways right across the receiver there, and put pretty damn good mark in it. And I went through the museum up at Fort Bragg a few years ago, and I seen they had the same weapon up there, which I thought was quite amusing to see, knowing that that's where it come from. Of course, we didn't get credit for it, like